is.
I hear a disembodied voice.
Nah, it's just me. I can't get the damn view right.
That's my alarm clock, you know. So.
What the hell's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
Well, the usual.
Oh, shut up.
There's no exceptions.
Your bullshit. Shut up.
Every day the same problem.
Yeah.
Every day the same mistake.
I don't know what's going on with my screen, dude.
Your screen is, well, it's actually looking a little better than it did before.
Well, thanks. It's going to have that, you know, 1940s, like,
really, it's just...
I swear to God, I feel like I should be wearing, like, a green visor and counting the fucking ticker tape or some bullshit like that. Hold on. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
It's okay. We're only going to record the audio. We're not going to record the
video. Host disabled participants sharing. You bastard.
Let me just mark the beginning of the tape here. Welcome to Enlightened Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, or good morning, or whatever time it is.
Okay, Mike, go ahead. You do it.
It is www.enlightenedradio.org, and we are here today as part of our sports tag. We like to slice that up with some entertainment, and we've got some, let me tell you, we got a really great one today, a very, very experienced entertainer, a good friend of mine. He's also a successful scriptwriter, screenwriter. I don't know how you say that, script or screen. I don't know which one offends you worse. Successful scriptwriter and also a musician as well. This is a kind of a theme with us. Had Charlie Wiener on last interview, musician. Which is very good. Excellent musician, by the way. But not to take anything away from his stand-up. His stand-up stands on its own. He doesn't need anything to help him with that. Mr. Mark Matusoff is with us, so... Welcome,
hey guys.
Mark, part of our fun interview. That's what we do here. Fun.
Hey,
hey
Mike.
Twice, but, yeah.
Hey, Mike. Can I ask a question?
What's going on?
Can I ask a question before we get started? Because when you said he's a scriptwriter, I have a urgent question to ask him, if I could.
Oh, no.
So I understand there's a screenwriter's strike going on, and I also understand that there is 300 million jobs that are going to be negatively affected by AI, generative AI, and that this is also an issue, I don't know whether it's on the table or behind the scenes, in the conflict with the screen actors and writers. And so I wondered if you had a comment on the record to make about... since we are on the record here.
Does Mark have a comment?
Yeah, well, I know we're just doing audio for this, but I'll show you. I was on strike. Me and my writing partner, Time Al Carpenter, were actually on strike last time in 2007.
Right.
Out in Hollywood with the screenwriters.
Right.
And I've been kind of out of the loop as far as screenwriting goes. My partner and I won a Nickel Fellowship in screenwriting from the Oscars, the organization that... host the Oscars and pass several years ago, and we kind of got into the groove, and then we're kind of out of the loop now, but we still support them. And as far as the AI issue, I think right now AI is probably unable to generate. It can't think. My understanding, it can pick things and put something out there that looks nice, but it can't really kind of create any original content. That's now. Who knows in the future? And I think that's what they're thinking about right now.
Yeah. Well,
so
AI
is not really ready to.
But go ahead, Mark. Go ahead. No, I don't want to stop you.
I was going to say, but right now it can't do it. But they are thinking ahead, because last time the last strike happened, streaming wasn't even a thing. And now they're striking partially because of streaming and the revenue that they're losing due to all these streaming platforms and things are being – somebody's making money, but it's not the writers. So that's what they're striking about. Also the on the streaming services, the programs they do for those are only like 4 or 5 episodes sometimes, whereas previously on the networks they were getting, you know, 16 to 26 episodes per season they're getting paid for. So it's a number of issues.
There has to be some level of pay that matches the work, and I don't think we're there yet. But here's my, I know you're familiar with Chuck Lorre. writer, producer, you know, Mike and Molly, and also write, you know, Bob Hart, Abishola, or whatever. Good, you know, but he always has a thing at the end. He always types like an opinion right at the end of his show. I don't know if you've ever, you know, paused it there, but one of the truly cool things I've seen is he said, I'm concerned about competing against AI. Let me see if that works. And he did a little, he said, hold on a second. I'm asking this AI to write something about this character. And then initially the AI came up and wrote something, and he went down at the end and said, well, I guess I'm not worried about AI anymore.
At this point, no.
It doesn't, you know, it can't think. So, like,
not
you just
yet.
No, not yet. Maybe it will, you know.
And I think this time they want to get ahead of the power curve as far as waiting until it's too late, as far as the writers go for that issue.
Right.
Yeah, right now all I can do is kind of dig through all the hundreds of millions and billions of things it can access, and it can put together a script, but it's not going to be anything particularly original. And it can't delve into things that'll be much more interesting. It could probably do some sort of serviceable script.
If you have a powerful computer, you know, it'll just go pick things randomly that are stored. I mean, what else is it going to do?
Well, that's right. That's
what it's going to take from its own library.
So. That's what it can do now. Yeah.
All right. Let's get started with the real interview. John, thank you for that question that sent us off on a 5-minute tangent. You may now dismiss yourself. Go away. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I want to just thank John, our original dusty-footed philosopher and host that does all the work and sweats his ass off to make sure enlightenedradio.org is a thing. I wouldn't be anywhere without him. I appreciate it, John. We love you, buddy. Thank you so much. And here we go with Mark. Mark, I actually have some real questions for you.
Oh, my God. Real questions? All right, I'm out of here.
I thought this was supposed to be fluff and bullshit. God damn it. Where's my agent? Okay. Wait, I'm my agent. Hold on.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Mark, here's what I want to know. Number one, I know you've been at this a while. Can you give me a number?
Over 30 years.
Okay, very good. Very good. Over 30 years. Congratulations. It's fantastic. Let me ask you this. Let's go back to when you started. What was it that wasn't cutting it for you in the engineering field where you went, you know, this engineering thing looks awful stable and I could probably make some really good money and have great benefits, but you know what? Yeah, I'll just throw that shit. I'll just go to open mic. But you had to have started at some of the open mics around town, right?
I did. And I was doing, you know, the open mics and a few paid gigs for a couple of years while I still had my engineering job. And to go back to engineering, it was a lot of fun and enjoyed it a lot. But the thing with engineering is every time you get promoted, you do less of the sexy, interesting stuff. And more
of the administrative corporate. Yeah.
Yes, you know, paperwork and shuffling and budget.
All political bullshit, yeah.
Yeah, not, in the last two years. In the last 2 years, as an engineer, I was at the NAVAIR Systems Command headquarters, and that's all I was doing was stuff I really didn't. So if I wasn't doing comedy, I probably would have found something else to do.
Since
I was doing comedy and I started getting paid gigs, I said, well, let me give it a shot. If it doesn't work out, I can always go back to engineering, and I just never did.
When you first started, did the mandolin, was that a thing in your head, or was that just you just wanted to start straight stand-up? Because I know your stand-up stands on its own, man. Your stand-up's really strong. I mean, your material's really strong. You don't need the mandolin, but I like mandolin.
Don't. Yeah, in fact, a couple of times on the road where I said, I just don't feel like doing it, and bring it with me to club owners. Where's the mandolin? That's what we wanted to see. All right, so I got to live with it. But it wasn't originally my act. I stuck it in, I guess, a few years in.
Okay.
I think I had to do it.
Now, you had already knew how to play the mandolin, right? When you came, when it was already kind of a learning process.
I already knew how to play it. I was, I've been playing since I'm a kid. But as far as putting it into an act and making it work, that took a little while to figure that dynamic out.
Now, let me ask you this. Is it a deliberate decision to sing in Romanian just to confuse the American audience. Is that what it is?
Yes.
And I absolutely love that, man. I almost know some of that. I mean, when you're singing it, I've seen it so many times. I'm like, I start kind of subconsciously. I'm like, I know this. This is so weird.
You start memorizing the Romanian words.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, this is pathetic. What am I doing? But, you know, I'm a fan, man. What can I say? You know, that's why, kind of why we're here. But not only that, I think you've got probably one of the nicer guys in the business, Logo. And I'm not trying to challenge whether you're nice or not, because, you know, look, I saw you stab the guy, but, you know, it was just me. I didn't see anybody. There was no other witnesses, so.
I didn't realize you were a witness. Okay, we'll have to take care of that.
But I guess my point is that certainly everywhere I went, you know, I would, because we had met, you know, I had gone through some of the same circles and some of the same mics and started getting paid back in 88, I think it was, and just screwing around, you know, and not really focusing, oh, I've got to do an open mic. You know, it was kind of like every other week for me for the first 8 months. And then I was like, man, I love this shit, you know, and I started doing, it's like biker bars and all this other, hey, open mic tonight. Hey, there's a threat on your life. It's your problem. Good luck getting out of here without any scars. So, no, I mean, I did some of those gigs and that was fine. You know, I just tried to have fun with whatever audience was in front of me. But man, looking back at some of those old tapes, it's just like, who the f- is that kid? Oh my God.
Yeah,
I'm like Trump looking at a picture of E. Jean Carroll and going, that's Marla. That's you, dumbass. My wife's like, that is you. And I'm like, no, it's not. I don't remember that show. I don't know what you're talking about. And it was me. And it was recognizable. And actually, there was like two or three jokes. And I was like, oh, shit. I don't remember. That's a good joke.
Yeah, I've done the same thing. I mean, it's painful.
You know, when you're like two or three of them. Yeah. You're like, but the rest of the shit you can just leave out. It's just all that other stuff. But those two or three, man, they'll set up the shit I'm doing now perfectly. So.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I miss the camaraderie of stand-up. That was a lot of fun. But tell me, how much fun was it going on the road and having comics go, hey, Mark, I know you got a hook up there at Wiseacres. Mark's like, I don't know. Call Mike.
I would get that, but if it's somebody I thought would work at the club well, I would say, I would always say, I don't know. I don't have any pull there.
Well, no, it's like a couple of people that you brought in that were great. They were just terrific. You know, I really enjoyed working with them. And the thing is I tried to straddle that line and you can't do it. I don't care who you are. If you book rooms, you're the enemy.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how nice you are, how kind you are, how decent you are. If you do something stupid, or you slip up, or you just bullshitting someone just to see if you could bullshit someone and play around, that stuff just goes like 100 million miles an hour, and you don't even realize it.
Yeah, that's right.
And then like 26, 27 years later, you see a podcast of yourself, and you're like, wow, I really did a lot of shit that sucked. Wow, that was terrible. If that really happened, if that was really me.
Recording in progress.
Oh, okay, here we go. Now we're recording it for posterity for the Facebook folks. I felt as if that dance between management and the comics was the tough one, was ownership and trying to get the younger comics and then the newer comics and then trying to hire people. And I mean, because when we first started, it wasn't like we had the most kind and accepting door person when we first started.
Well,
she was more like a Nazi.
Yeah, I remember.
I mean, it was just.
Well, it's you know, it's tough, you know, if you're a comic and you're booking a room, it's a tough, you know, it's tough to separate.
Yeah.
Friendship, you know, because oh yeah, because friends of mine, you know, I have that little room I book once in a while, and you know, it's tough to say, you know, to friends of yours that you know they all expect to work there, but I don't think you're right for the room, or I don't think you should headline, you know. Then you know it's you're.
Oh, you mean business, the one that I ate a big business. Shit turn in? I ate a shit turn.
Oh,
in.
You didn't. Yeah, you did fine there. But it's one of the things that you know.
I was sitting there looking at his phone. You remember that? This guy sitting there looking at his phone, and he just looked up every once in a while and go. Eh. It was like performing merch. It was.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the room is it is what it is. But I'm saying it's a line I really didn't want everyone to do. You know, because you have your friends and now they all want to work for you.
Right.
But some of them are not right, or some of them I like them personally, I don't like their act, or some of them I don't like their act, but I like them personally, and vice versa. And others, hey man, I should headline. Well, no, you're not going to headline my that type of thing. So it's tough to mix friendship with business.
I caught that. Yeah, I caught that forever, man. Just the assumption that you know, I'll name names here. One guy I bumped down to feature. He came in and headlined and really had a serious attitude problem and kind of screamed and yelled at the staff and pissed everybody off. And I explained it to him. I got on the phone with him Sunday afternoon after his weekend. And he was decidedly embarrassed. He said, you know, I'm sorry. I screwed up and I'll try to do better. I said, listen, man, I'm going to bring you back, but I'm only going to bring you back to feature. And he said, wow, that really hurts. And I said, yeah, I'm sorry. He goes, you know what? He goes, I get it. I'll come back in future. You see what you think. And we'll talk about bringing you back to close after that. You know, I didn't want to close the door on it completely because the guy had helped me out quite a bit. And he was very kind. But he had a really, really shitty weekend. You know, just a nasty. A lot of things happened personally. And you can't let that. It does. It does. Sometimes we can see it. It spills over. You don't want it to, but it does.
It's tough not to.
You know, I brought him into feature. He freaking destroyed. Was just the headliner couldn't say enough professional things about him. And I told him, perfect. Come on back and headline. And when he headlined, it was the same attitude. It was the same thing. He was just happy to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just a lot. His act was. His act was what it was. I mean, look, he was an impressionist, did a lot of over-the-top stuff, did a lot of running around and falling on the stage. I did my share of that when I first started. Now I felt bad for the stage. You know, I got to the point where I fell on the stage and went, oh, I think I broke the stage. So, you know, I wasn't gonna continue to do that because I would, you know, hurt myself. It's just, you know, sometimes a good, solid Kramer impression involves slipping and falling and hitting your head.
Face planting, yes.
Oh my God, yeah. And I'm just not, you know, the impressions are fine. They're fun to do, but you got to be spot on with them. And that's one of the things I discovered. It's got to be very, very perfectly specific. If you're not, somebody's going to critique. Somebody's going to have a problem with the way you know, I don't like your impression of the Pope, Mark. It sounds too much like Joe Pesci. Mark's like, that's the point.
Everything I do sounds like Joe.
Everything, every impression I do sounds like, hey, get on the table, you little spider. funny how, a clown? What do I amuse you? No, I kind of felt like, especially the last 10 years, I just moved off of a lot of stuff and just started talking about what I can see, what I know.
Sure.
What I'm aware of, you know, just, I start looking at her and going, there's some material there. That's, and then you go up and do it. I don't tell her. And then you do it on. I'll say, you know, Paige, this is my wife. I'll tell her, I've got two surprises for you. One is probably going to be really good. The other one, I don't think you're going to find very amusing. And honestly, Mark, she'll tell me right afterwards. She'll say, both of those were really funny jokes. The first one was delivered well. The second one, you can work on that a little.
Yeah, well, it's good to have some honest feedback.
You know, and that's fine with me. I want her to say that. I want her to say, you know, it doesn't belong necessarily in this group of jokes, but you may want to move it, think about moving it to that group of jokes. And lo and behold, nobody knows you better than your spouse. You know, if somebody's with somebody, they're going to, you know, and my wife is still a fan, you know? So especially, I can't thank John Coulter enough for having that room up here at the Abolitionist Dale, just right around the corner, because after the stroke, it really just was like speech therapy for me, man.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it really, really helped. And I know there's people out there that, you know, around this area, it's very hard to find a good room because you got to drive. You know, yeah. I think to get to Tyson's, it would probably at this point take me an hour and 50 minutes, probably.
Yeah.
Just because of the traffic now.
Yeah, everything's been built up. Started
hour 20. Yep. You know, hour 15, you know, no, there wasn't the build. Now it's all built up, and Route 9 and Route 7 are all built up, and there's all these friggin', you know, you just, it's, the drive is crazy. But the other thing I wanted to ask you too is, we talked about this, and I think we talked about this a long time ago, is keeping, when I first started, I kept two separate notebooks, one to keep the details on the financing. You know, how much the gas cost, how far it was, what kind of mileage I got, what did I spend on food, this, that, and the other thing. What did I spend on? Did I have to spend anything on lodging? If so, what was it? You know, that kind of. Mm-hmm. And then I keep a notebook on how the show went and actually writing.
Yeah.
You know, I'd write, you know, you write up your set list and slide it. I had a little thing, insert thing where I slide it in and just, that's my set list for tonight. And I just go over it and over and over it in the hotel room. A lot of times I wouldn't even bring it to the club with me. I just have it in my head that that's kind of what I'm going to do. And then learning as you go through this, if an MC does something really, really, you know, doesn't have a lot of experience and beats on the crowd a little bit too much, you got to kind of pivot.
Right.
If you're the feature, you got to pivot and you got to kind of do the MC's job that he is now, he or she has kindly left for you to mop up, you know?
It's called digging out of a hole.
Oh, I know. A hole that you did not, you're looking at the MC going, this is a lovely hole you have made for us. Let's just try to get the hell out of here. Yeah, exactly. That's your first joke. You know, that's your first joke, is to identify that, talk about it. And then don't make it too obvious that you're beating up the MC, but just have fun with it and acknowledge that it's supposed to be stand up and get them into it. And it doesn't necessarily mean doing prepared material right away, is what I'm saying.
Right.
You know?
Sometimes that's one thing I learned, not to jump into material right off the bat, you know.
Right.
Let them get to see you and hear you at least for a minute or so. And then you can kind of, you know.
It's like, okay, you got 30 minutes. Go. Thank you. Good night.
Yep.
If you're going to push yourself like that, I just, man, oh, man, and let me tell you, in your brain, you're thinking, for me on the road, I'm thinking, yeah, Coke will be a great enhancer.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so stupid. Well, I've been up here for 15 minutes and just burned through 55 minutes of material. So yeah.
So what do you guys want to talk about?
So what else is going on? Yeah. Someone give Roger the light. That's the other thing that we talk about too, is there's a lot of comics back in the day that give us the light.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think that's changed much.
No, I still, I still see the light. I mean, that giving the light.
You know, you got 5 minutes, you give me a 5 minute cue, or sometimes I like to have three.
Yeah.
You know, I like to have 3 or 2 minutes somewhere in there where I know I can jump into a bit, close with some laughs and say, thank you. Good night. And not step on the headline, you know?
Yeah, I like about a 5 minute light is good for me. But yeah, just so I know, I'm pretty good with time, but just in case sometimes.
Oh, you're always good with time, dude. Always.
Well, not always. Sometimes there was a club I did in Alabama. This guy didn't want me there in the first place. It's a long story, but I did this weekend room in Huntsville many years ago. It's not there anymore, but, and I was opening for Rodney Carrington. And so I was the last minute, the booking agency sent me down because somebody canceled. I, you know, drove all the way down there and And the first thing the guy says, the owner says, oh, great, a Yankee comic. That's not what I want. And he storms away from it. All right, so the owner doesn't like me. So I think at one of the shows, he was going to give me the light, and he was holding up a candle. But what happened was I was playing the mandolin, and the whole audience was holding up candles. I didn't see the light. So I ran over. I should have gotten to him, but so I didn't see his light. It was just one candle among all of them. And he comes in, he comes in my face, says, you win, oh, and I was over by 5 minutes, which is, it's wrong, because Rodney is the headliner. And he was in my face, and instead of arguing with us, and, you know, tell him, you know, I said, you know what, you're right, I own it, I went over, that won't happen again. He looked at me, I actually expected me to argue with him. Anyway, all right, he stormed off.
But I could have, hey, man. Okay, he wanted to be.
That's what I'm saying. Instead of saying, hey, man, it was a lot of lights, and, you know, no excuse, I went over. And, yeah. But the fact he didn't like, I thought he was going to fire me right there, because he didn't like me to begin with, just when he met me.
You went over, okay, all right. Well,
yeah,
go ahead.
I know. So yeah. I owned it. I just, he was going to fire me to fire, but I'm not going to make excuses. And, you know, it's a professional, you're right.
Yeah, I think sometimes if you own it, they move away from it. Not at all like my situation at Junior's with, I'm going to forget his name because my brain doesn't work anymore. I used to remember everybody's name. A Hispanic guy from New York, very funny. He used to be on Tough Crowd, black hair, really, he had a drug problem, beat it, and then I guess he relapsed and then overdosed.
Okay. Yeah.
He went up and did his act at Junior's, and he's a New York comic, so he's not going to hold back. And man, Junior just, you know, sat down and just came up and lit into him. He was really, really pissed off at him. And the dude was like, look, I don't have a contract that says anything about what you want. You hired me because I have an act and your people saw me. You hired me. I'm not going to give this audience bullshit. I'm going to give them who I am. And I got the point. And Junior said, okay, fine. He left, and actually no one saw Junior the rest of the weekend. He didn't come back out. No Friday show, no Saturday show. So it hit, you know, it was just one of those things, you know. I didn't want this to devolve into us talking about stand-up. I wanted to talk about a few things, just practical things. By the way, how's your car?
Oh, well, I got rid of the SUV.
Oh, you did?
About 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Well, it was it wouldn't pass inspection anymore. It was 20 years old and had 300,000 miles on it. And it was it was going to cost me like $1,500 to get it pass inspection. I think, well, at this, I had the other car. I had two at the time because I inherited my mother's car when she decided to start driving at age 90. So I said, okay, well. This, I'm not going to spend the money to keep this thing going. So one of the mechanics bought it off me for like $500. Okay, perfect. Good.
Oh,
So, yeah. So, I got the Toyota. But the Santa Fe is gone. Yeah.
Okay. So you have the Toyota then?
Yeah.
Is it a Camry?
With a Corolla.
A Corolla. Nice. Thing. Okay. Nice little efficient, fuel efficient.
Yeah.
That's all you need, man. That's all you really need. That and the road. The thing is, though, is, you know, I went through I went through, I think, four cars, you know, on the road. It just, it happens. I mean, there's no better story than telling someone I had to trade my car title. I had to trade my car title the title for a tow. I was in Florida.
Yeah.
The car was so shitty. I told the guy, I will give you the car. And those are the practical things that really happen that people don't really kind of, they lose sight of a little bit. General populace don't really know some of the bullshit that goes on behind. And I'm not saying, oh, poor, pitiful me. I'm not trying to do that. I'm just saying, this isn't a real job. You know, it's, and some of it's really, really freaking hard. That's all I'm saying. It gets really difficult and dicey sometimes, and you go to places that are really sketchy, you stay in sketchy places, you perform for sketchy people, you get your sketchy money, and you go on your sketchy way, is what I'm saying. It's all very, very suspect. But yeah, you got to do it.
Yep.
You got to pay the bills, man. You got to pay the bills. So that's,
yeah, I think I had four or five cars go over 300,000 miles. I had a Saturn, a little two-door Saturn. I had got almost 400,000.
You are like a road warrior, though.
Was. I'm not on the road full-time like I used to be.
Yeah, you used to drive. I mean, just and I rode with you on the thing to up above Green Bay. What the hell was that? Minot.
Yeah, Minot, North Dakota.
Minot, yeah. Because I made that trip later on, remember, by myself.
Yeah.
You know, and I told you I was afraid my car was going to blow up. It didn't. Right. Yeah, I mean, they had me back, which was really nice.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they didn't have to, but they had a fallout or something, and I think you called me.
Yeah.
Because somebody was saying, hey, where's that Mike guy that came with Mark? He could come back in here. And they called you, and you said, no, I can't do it, but I'll call somebody. You immediately thought of me, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
But then I got on the road, and I was like, man, I really don't appreciate this anymore, Mark. I hate driving. Well, you know, I mean, I was fine. I drove like we did. I drove all the way to frigging Green Bay and got a hotel room. Like I took a 2-day, and then got up and drove the rest of the way, and it was fun, man. It was a good day. I enjoyed it, and the people were really nice. So I can't. That's a fun too. Go ahead, Marky.
I was gonna say that was a fun little room. You know, we do these used to do all these rooms in the Midwest, little smaller towns, and you know, it's called flyover country. For the most part, those audiences are there for the show. So they're usually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is I didn't think – I went into that Duluth room that Chuck Johnson used to book.
Mm-hmm.
It's booked in that room, and it's like up on a balcony, and it's like a college-type environment.
Right.
And all the kids come in with some older folks, and they all set the room up.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you first walk in, it's like one of those things where you're looking, how in the hell are they going to do stand up here?
Right.
Then all of a sudden, in about 15 minutes, it looks like a comedy club. You know, the owner's like, we got everything. We'll take care of everything. I was like, yeah, right. Okay. You know, because you're doing another bar. And I've got, I can't even be in bars anymore, man. I can't even. There's some of my all-time favorite bars. I won't even go in them anymore, man. I just can't. Can't do it. So, but I went in and it was just fantastic. It was just one of the better setups. And it was cool because the owner understood how to MC a show. You know?
Right.
He went up and MC'd and then I can't remember who featured. I don't know who featured. And then I closed and it was just so much fun. Everybody did well.
Yeah.
I love that. I love it when everybody does well because everybody sells.
Right. And then it's... You know, it's one of those things where if a room is set up right, the audience knows they're trained, they know how to behave.
Yep.
You know, then it's always a good show.
And it makes it easier on us. It really does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've had people come up to me after shows. Oh, that was great. I said, you know what? You guys were easy. Great crowd. Made my job easy. It does.
I mean, when it's that professional, it does. It does. And, you know, there have been times when I've been not quite so professional. And I'm sure that
we all have. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've gotten in the weeds in the course of like 30 seconds, and it just, you spend the next 10 minutes digging, just trying to plow your way, and then you kind of get out, and you're out, and you're like looking above, and you're like, oh, shit. And then you'll say something else, and then it's another 10 minutes, and it's just a struggle.
Yeah.
And I've done that before, but honestly, I can safely say it hasn't happened to me a lot.
No, not a lot, but there's all of us, you know, there's shows that, you just got off on the wrong foot and wow. Okay. And the audience just turns on you in the first few minutes and now you gotta figure out a way to get out of it.
Right. I don't believe, I still don't. People were just this thing about all the A room comics and the B room comics and that's all horseshit. I'm sorry, but it is, you know, comics. Can some blue acts transcend into A rooms and do very well? Yes, they can.
Yeah.
But you better be good at it.
Yeah.
You better be funny. Because if you're not, you won't transition. You'll just be known as a dirty act.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to bring up like Grandma Lee, but I'll bring up Grandma Lee because, you know, I don't like this. I'm not going to speak ill of her because she was, you know, not the cleanest comic in the world, but she was incredibly funny.
Right.
Her delivery was just perfect.
Yeah, people bought the character.
You know, it was, I mean, and she sold it well, too.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, it was just, that sale was just, that was brilliant. Yeah, and she passed last year, didn't she?
It wasn't, I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I just know, I just remembered trying to do some of those Carnival Cruise things and try to help those folks out. Man, oh man, did I ever get slapped in the face? Wow. It's like you see somebody and they're like, okay, everybody, you all have to be clean. This is the afternoon show. Then you see some guy go up and do like, and they're all like, oh yeah, that was brilliant.
What?
And then that's the person that wins the night show.
Right. Yeah.
You know, when they told us specifically, you know, put on your cuffs. Because they did. Right. They would pigeonhole people.
But then they're never going to be able to work a ship. I mean, I don't know what they were winning.
Exactly. What are you really, you're winning that night. How much work did you actually end up getting?
Yeah, I mean,
some folks I know got a lot of work.
Some did, some of them deserved it, and some of them, you know, they won these contests. We're supposed to get booked on a ship, but then they only had 15 minutes material, and you know, you're supposed to do, you know, 2 to 3 different 30-minute sets when you're on the ship, and it turns out they didn't have it. So it was, I didn't understand the whole thing, but
Me neither. And we also have to kind of think that. That goes back to structurally what we were talking about is like, you should be, because you and I probably both know of a very specific situation I know of where a comic got booked to do a ship and was fired the first show. And then when they came to the port, they sent the comic home.
It's happened. Yeah.
I know. I've seen it. I know somebody who I talked to when they called me when they got fired. You know, I got back to mainland and they said, man, I don't believe this, but I got fired. And I couldn't believe it either because it was a really good comic.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes certain situations you get find yourself involved in just don't work. They just don't work for your material and the way you see things.
Sometimes you're the wrong comic for a particular audience.
I'm not going to think biker act for Mark Matusa. I'm not going to be like,
Just before the pandemic, I got booked to do a show. It was on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and it was supposed to be a corporate private show. It was for, you know, okay money. It was okay, fine. So I had this thing, and I couldn't get the details. And the week of, the booker sends me the details. It's a sorority party. I said, you gotta be kidding me. It was like the sorority formal. And, you know, I was definitely the wrong comic for that. You know, I don't know if people can say, I'm older than their parents, you know, and that's, you know, if I was in college too, you know, and they bring a comic out that's my dad's age, same thing. Yeah. And I'll give them credit. It was the sorority and their dates, and there was a formal. They were polite. I'll give them that. They were attentive. They didn't laugh, but they were attentive. They weren't rude. I could play the music at the end. They like that. The last 10 minutes are fine, but it was terrible. And I was, whoever booked me, should have known better.
It was the wrong thing.
Or tell me what it was. And I would have said, no, you know, I'm not going to do that.
Man, that's the thing is sometimes I would worry so much about certain people being put together. Yeah. And then I'd come back home and I'd be like, man, that show was brilliant. It was so good the way you put that one person and then the next person.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. We are at 40 minutes now. John's trying to cut us. Okay. Talk about getting a light. John just gave us the light,
so,
Mark.
So we're giving a light. All right. Well.
Well, let me wrap this up, though. Johnny, thank you. Again, there he is. That handsome man. How are you, John Case? John, Mark. Mark, John, you guys have met before. He saw you at Abolitionist Ale, I think.
No, been up there. But
weren't there. Where were we? We were somewhere and we saw Mark.
I don't know. I just don't know.
We've never met.
You know what? We're both so high, it doesn't matter. I'm on edibles and he's smoking weed, so it doesn't matter.
John, I go way back about 40 minutes or so.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You guys,
I made a lot of promises to myself.
Mark, I can't thank you enough. And please, John, if you're going to put that name out there, spell it with the F and not the V.
Well, I thought I didn't know which side of the Berlin Wall really it was on. So I, you know, just the F kind of sounds a little bit German, and the the V sounded a little more farther east. I don't know, and I made a mistake.
What did you say? I said, "Oh no, he's Romanian." He goes, "Oh, a little vacation spot."
I'm gonna do like Mark. I own the mistake, and I'll
no problem. To no fix problem. It. I've seen it spelled so many different ways. And pronounced 100 different ways. So no problem.
Hey, you know what? It's Kukurini, Miachislav. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know
how to spell Kukurini. Yeah. It's,
very familiar. Hey, I don't know how to spell it.
I'm never sure how many C's, R's, or N's there are in it. That's what it is.
I got one wrong in preschool every day. One wrong.
I believe
my teacher would cross it out and spell it the right way.
I believe the AI chatbots spell better.
We got a bolt, man. We got to get out of here.
Okay.
I believe
right.
the AI
I
chat.
I got to get on the road here because I'm going to the dump and the grocery store. I'm going to be exhausted.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Guys, we love you. Marky, thank you so much, buddy.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Be safe on the road.
Take care, guys.
Take care, everybody.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.